Hi, welcome to this podcast brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles, and today I'm going to be talking about some of the data that was presented at the European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology, which was held the 29th through the 31st of October 2020 virtually. Enjoy listening. A German study looked at the real-world evidence with regard to brodalumab in disease management of psoriasis after 12 and 52 weeks, and data was obtained between November 2017 and January 2020 from 216 German study centers on the effect of brodalumab and the Absolute Psoriasis Area Severity Index, the APASI. In over 500 patients. This was presented by Dr. Ralph von Kiedrowski in Germany, and he presented the 12-week results of this study at the EADV Congress. So the mean age of the subjects was 50, and the mean duration of disease was 20 years, and nearly 65% of the patients were male. Baseline grades of psoriasis severity were 28% had mild disease, 41% had moderate disease, 19% had severe disease, and 12% had very severe disease. More than half of the patients had never received biologics before, 57.2%. And of those who did receive the preceding biological therapy, 39% were changed within 3 months from IL-17A antagonists, and 47% from TNF blockers, and 17% from IL-23/12 or IL-23 antagonists. At week 12, 77.2% of the patients met the primary endpoint of an APASI of less than or equal to 3. Interestingly, the mean APASI already dropped from 16.9 at baseline to 9.1 by week 2 and continued to decrease to 4.8 at week 4. PASI 75 and PASI 100 were achieved by 82.3% and 37% of the biologic-naive patients, compared with 64.8% and 27.8% with previous TNF blocker treatment, respectively. After 12 weeks, complete clearance, so PASI 100, was achieved by one quarter of the patients in the baseline category of very severe psoriasis, with a mean PASI of 30.5. In conclusion, this study on real-world evidence confirms that brodalumab induces swift ameliorations of the APASI scores with a high grade of efficacy. Hi, welcome to this podcast brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles, and today I'm going to be talking about some of the data that was presented at the European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology, which was held the 29th through the 31st of October 2020 virtually. Enjoy listening. A German study looked at the real-world evidence with regard to brodalumab in disease management of psoriasis after 12 and 52 weeks, and data was obtained between November 2017 and January 2020 from 216 German study centers on the effect of brodalumab and the Absolute Psoriasis Area Severity Index, the APASI. In over 500 patients. This was presented by Dr. Ralph von Kiedrowski in Germany, and he presented the 12-week results of this study at the EADV Congress. So the mean age of the subjects was 50, and the mean duration of disease was 20 years, and nearly 65% of the patients were male. Baseline grades of psoriasis severity were 28% had mild disease, 41% had moderate disease, 19% had severe disease, and 12% had very severe disease. More than half of the patients had never received biologics before, 57.2%. And of those who did receive the preceding biological therapy, 39% were changed within 3 months from IL-17A antagonists, and 47% from TNF blockers, and 17% from IL-23/12 or IL-23 antagonists. At week 12, 77.2% of the patients met the primary endpoint of an APASI of less than or equal to 3. Interestingly, the mean APASI already dropped from 16.9 at baseline to 9.1 by week 2 and continued to decrease to 4.8 at week 4. PASI 75 and PASI 100 were achieved by 82.3% and 37% of the biologic-naive patients, compared with 64.8% and 27.8% with previous TNF blocker treatment, respectively. After 12 weeks, complete clearance, so PASI 100, was achieved by one quarter of the patients in the baseline category of very severe psoriasis, with a mean PASI of 30.5. In conclusion, this study on real-world evidence confirms that brodalumab induces swift ameliorations of the APASI scores with a high grade of efficacy. Another abstract looked at a novel molecule, a JAK1 inhibitor called INCB054707, in patients with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa. And there were two phase two studies that looked at 52-week data, so one-year data. So patients with HS experience painful inflammatory lesions and a markedly reduced quality of life. The rationale for using a JAK inhibitor in this indication is that treatments regarding pro-inflammatory cytokine signaling may influence disease pathology and ameliorate symptoms of HS. There's a really unmet medical need for an oral treatment for these patients. These data were presented by Dr. Afsana Alavi from the Mayo Clinic in the U.S., that was two phase two trials with this JAK1 inhibitor, with a very, unique name of INCB054707. That is an oral small molecule JAK1 inhibitor with a 52-fold greater selectivity for JAK1 versus JAK2. So the first study was an open label single arm study. And the second study, study two, was a placebo controlled dose escalation study in which three doses of the JAK inhibitor were tested. So either 30 milligrams, 60 milligrams, or 90 milligrams. The primary endpoint was safety and tolerability, but efficacy endpoints were assessed as secondary study outcomes. So all included patients were adults and they had moderate to severe HS. So for example, early stage two or three for at least 6 months. They had lesions in at least two different anatomic locations and total abscess and inflammatory nodule count of greater than or equal to 3. So with regard to safety, all occurring treatment emergent adverse events were mild or moderate. One patient in study one, in the first study, discontinued due to upper respiratory tract infection and fibromyalgia. In study two, four patients, 15.4%, treated with the highest dose of the JAK inhibitor experienced thrombocytopenia. So they had platelets less than 150 times 10 to the ninth per liter. And this is a known JAK inhibitor related side effect. So these patients had dose interruptions for up to 2 weeks. However, as Dr. Alavi pointed out, so the platelet counts returned to levels above 100 times 10 to the ninth, and the drug was restarted in those patients without sequelae. In addition, the JAK1 inhibitor showed remarkable efficacy in 43% of the patients in the first study and 88% of the patients who received the highest dose in the second study achieved a complete response of their HS. And that was defined as a greater than or equal to 50% reduction in the abscess and an inflammation number count, with no increase in either abscess or draining fistula counts relative to baseline. So Dr. Alavi said, quote, "With regard to the AN count, we could even show a better dose-dependent response. An AN count of 0.2 was achieved by 63% of patients in the highest dose group. All quality of life measures were nicely and significantly improved in a dose-dependent way," end quote. In addition, a biomarker analysis of inflammatory mediators was performed. And according to this analysis, a significant drop in inflammatory markers was seen with increasing doses of the JAK inhibitor. So an improvement was seen as early as week one. However, further larger studies are definitely warranted to back up these preliminary results. So looking to pediatric moderate to severe chronic plaque psoriasis, there was a study that was presented by Professor Christine Baudemer from the Necker Children's Hospital in France. This was a study looking at secukinumab and in European patients. And secukinumab, it's a fully human monoclonal antibody that inhibits interleukin-17, IL-17, and thereby disrupting one of the key cytokines involved in that inflammatory pathway, which leads to the formation of psoriatic plaques. So the 162 participants were involved in this study. They were between the ages of 6 and 18, and they were randomized to one of four treatment arms. So they either received low-dose secukinumab or high-dose secukinumab, etanercept or a placebo. And the primary outcome measure was dual, the percentage of patients demonstrating a 75% improvement from baseline in psoriasis area and severity index, the PASI score, at week 12, and the percentage of participants who showed investigators' global assessment, IGA, modified 2011 response of 0 or 1 at week 12. Both secukinumab treatment arms met this endpoint by week 12, and both the high-dose and the low-dose secukinumab continued to demonstrate high efficacy, as demonstrated by PASI and IGA-modified 2011 responses at week 52. Furthermore, improvements in the Children's Dermatology Life Quality Index scores were higher in both secukinumab groups than either the placebo or etanercept groups. And the proportion of responders was also higher in secukinumab groups. So safety profiles were deemed favorable in both groups. So the recommended dose of secukinumab for children up to 50 kilograms is 75 milligrams, and a starting dose of 150 milligrams for those who weigh more than 50 milligrams. So this dose could be increased up to 300 milligrams if deemed necessary. Both doses of secukinumab that were tested here demonstrated high and sustained efficacy up to week 52 in clearing skin and improving quality of life with a favorable safety profile in pediatric patients with severe chronic plaque psoriasis. There was a poster by presented by Dr. Ali Sevdem-Golkan, and it was the results of a single-center cross-sectional study that followed 43 patients with the diagnosis of chronic spontaneous urticaria. So 15 of these patients, so 35%, discontinued omalizumab injections on account of the COVID-19 pandemic, and it followed these patients. All 43 patients were interviewed by phone and completed the UAS and UCT questionnaires, and then they were compared to previous UAS and UCT scores in their files. So the patients who had discontinued omalizumab, there was a statistically significant increase in their UAS scores and a statistically significant decrease in their UCT, so their urticaria control test and their urticaria activity scores. Among the patients who had kept up their omalizumab treatment regimen, neither those scores were significantly different. So the conclusion that this team made in that poster was that COVID-19 pandemic, it's had a negative impact on the management of CSU, of the chronic spontaneous urticaria, and the patients who discontinued their treatment protocol due to the pandemic seem to have been affected greater than those who continued. Thank you for listening to this podcast, which was brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. I hope you enjoyed listening.